Hey, Fidelity, how can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Stevie Nicol, and we've got quite the lineup for you on today's show. We will have Don Hutchison, Gabriele Marcotti, Frank Leboeuf, and Shaka Hislop as well. We'll be looking back on what happened in the Europa League games today, and starting with Manchester United's 1-1 draw with Milan. It means Milan will be taking a crucial away goal into the second game in San Siro on the 18th of March. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said afterwards that his side were a bit slow in possession. He says a draw was a fair result. Would you agree, Don?
I wouldn't, Kay. No, I thought Milan were robbed. I thought Frank Kessie's goal was legitimate. I thought it bounced up off his hip. So they got away with one there, Man United. He's right in terms of how slow in possession they were. They were really lethargic. They couldn't get going. Diallo made a difference when he came off the bench and scored a fantastic goal from a Bruno Fernandes. Yet another assist. But their play in general was quite weak. It was quite slow. I thought Milan were excellent, I've got to say, with a Milan patched up side that came away from home with six or seven major players injured. I thought they put up a real good performance and should have came away with the win.
With that in mind, Frank, the fact that Manchester United were at home and were against a depleted Milan side, did you expect more from them?
Well, yes, but we know Manchester United is better maybe away from home when they don't have to lead the game. I want to agree with Don. I think Harry Maguire and James had two beautiful opportunities to make Manchester United winning that game. I think it's only, for me, a fair result. It's true that it should have been a penalty for Milan and Kessié, but at the end of the day, I think it's a fair result. It's a deserving draw for both teams, and nothing much to say. But it's not done for Milan for the second leg, because we know that Manchester United will be more dangerous away from home than they've been to Old Trafford.
They will be more dangerous away from home. We know how good their away record is. But Milan were missing some players. What if they come back and then they have them at home too? Do you fear for them?
Not, I fear for both of these sides, who's actually going to go ahead and win this game over two legs. You know, I was disappointed. I was disappointed straight off the bat when I saw the two teams. And so that probably didn't help me actually watching the game. Because if you look at the shots, it almost looks like it might have been a decent game. I didn't enjoy this at all, quite honestly. And I think I'd rather put it that neither side deserved to win as opposed to either side deserved a draw. So it wasn't my cup of tea whatsoever. Two depleted sides, not particularly enjoyable. Horrible night, wind howling, rain coming down. Not for me.
What about you, Gab? Kessie was brilliant, wasn't he?
Yeah, Kessie was very good. The way he's been excellent for some time now. I think he really stepped up in terms of leadership as well. When you mentioned, of course, all the guys who were out, from Ibrahimovic to Teo Hernandez to Benacer to Romagnoli to Çalhanoğlu to Rebic. And I thought this was on the manager. He had a lot of guys out. He said, okay, obviously Rashford missing and Pogba missing and Cavani missing for United as well. But he said, we're going to take this opportunity. We're going to play our game. We're going to press them. We're going to try to play fast when we can. And Milan went out and did that. They certainly performed very well. And then look, in the end, football's a game of episodes, right? So you want to bring up the Daniel James chance and the Maguire chance. Yeah, Milan had chances too. This could have been 3-3. And, you know, maybe nobody would have enjoyed it. But as it was, I thought, if you're a Milan fan, this was a pretty good game.
Shaka, how much do you think the likes of Rashford and Cavani were missed in this tie?
Well, without question, they were missed, and you saw that. I thought Manchester United were second best in the first half, and then were the better of the two teams in the second. So from that regard, a draw is a deserved result. But quite clearly, the pace of Rashford, the running of Rashford, the experience of Cavani will always be missed. And you saw that. You just saw, I thought Martial's in particular was disappointing in the first half. And you saw how much it changed when Diallo came on. And, you know, both Rashford and Cavani are upgrades to the teenager, taking nothing away from him, his goal, and how good United were. But like everybody says, I think this game is really delicately poised going into the second leg, makes it interesting. And again, in against two teams who matched up so well despite the absences.
Don, just one question before we get into that Frank Kessié disallowed goal as well, just quickly. What did you make of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's substitutions? Because he's been criticised by many for not going for it in this game and maybe getting a bit too defensive towards the end.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, being the home side as well. I think he's struggling in terms of who he's got fit, and Martial limped off. He's got Cavani injured, Rashford injured. His major players probably, you know, all gone, that he couldn't trust some of the youngsters, even though he brought Diallo on who scored. So it's one of them, I think, when you're in the moment, you've got a judgment call. I thought Milan were on top in terms of how they played. Possession stats might have been even, but the game that I watched, I thought every time Milan went forward, I thought they could have scored. Liao missed not great chances, but he had a volley that he just had a fresh air shot and he didn't make good contact. So I think if you're Ollie, I think sometimes you've got to walk away from a result thinking, right, we didn't lose the game. We could have easily lost it 2-1. As the lad said, you know, Maguire missed a sitter, so it could have been 2-2. Sometimes you walk away from a result and you just go back to the drawing board and you get, right, we go to San Siro and we try and get an away goal and we put Milan under pressure with more of our fit players back as well as the Milan players.
Gab, you talked about some of those moments that defined this game. What about that Frank Kessié disallowed goal then? Did he control it with his arm, in your opinion?
As I saw it, no. I think most people would agree with it. I think it clearly came off his chest. If you look closely, you can actually see his shirt move when the ball hits him. You look at the reaction of the United players who were right there. They all saw it. Nobody appealed. The referee gave it. I don't know what VAR saw.
Stevie, you don't agree with that?
You know, it really is a tough call. I don't think it's a clear call, as Gab said, but it is a tough call. And the one angle that I saw, when the ball passes Kessié, it loses pace. That doesn't happen if it hits you on the hip bone. So for that reason is why I'm going to say that I think it was a good call, because, as I say, when that ball shoots up at him, it loses pace when it hits his body. That don't happen if it hits your hip.
Xhaka, can they only overturn this if it's definitive, though?
Yeah, that's the thing. And well, first of all, I don't think the ball lost any pace. I thought it came off his hip kind of quickly and took him past both Matic and McTominay. So, which suggests, again, I think it hit. It hit his hip. But again, no angle I saw is conclusive, so the call on the field should have stood. And for me, from the time I saw it, I thought that was him. And as Gab rightly pointed out, not a single Manchester United player even put their hand up in appealing the handball. And that, for me, is the biggest indicator that nobody on the field thought it hit Kessie's hand. And the goal should have stood. Nothing about this said it should have been called back for me.
Elsewhere, Olympiacos were beaten 3-1 by Arsenal. An Arsenal side looking dangerous in attack, but a little shaky at the back. But the goals came through for them. And Frank, this was a good start for them considering what happened last season between these two sides.
Well, yes, I think we can say that they maybe get in the way to get their revenge. And they did what they had to do, almost did what they had to do. They made some mistakes. I think they play sometimes a very dangerous game. The ball that Leno gave to Ceballos was a kind of a suicide for Ceballos, and he should have done otherwise. David Luiz as well, you know, in the first half. But overall, I would say that the Gunners deserve, of course, to win. And I don't see the Greek scoring 3 goals at the Emirates. So I would say that the Gunners are in a very good way to go through.
Stevie, can they win the whole thing, Arsenal?
I think they could. They, along with the other two English sides, are the 3 favourites, in my opinion. And if it's just between them, then there's no reason why Arsenal couldn't win it. Now, they'll have to do better than they did today. Listen, they won in an absolute canter. They were in first gear for the whole game and scored three goals. But the other side of the ball, they were desperate. They created their own problems, giving the ball away, trying to play out from the back. So if they can get rid of that and keep scoring goals, then yes, they could win it.
Xhaka, do you think so yourself? Would you agree with Stevie, or do you have fears about their defence?
I think Arsenal at their best can win it, but as we've been seeing about Arsenal for not just this season or the Europa League, but for as long as I can remember, Arsenal's inconsistency continues to haunt them. So while you take this win for what it is, the performance for what it is, you just want to see Arsenal be a little bit more consistent just throughout before you start putting your mortgage on them.
The other game, another team from North London, Spurs taking on Dinamo Zagreb. It finished 2-0, both goals coming from Harry Kane. The difference maker in this one, Don?
Yeah, he certainly was, Kay. And the difference, I think, was the size of the squad. I mean, Spurs made five substitutions. They brought on Bale, Bergwijn, Moura, Højbjerg, Vinicius. So at any given time, I mean, Jose went pretty strong. Harry Kane was a star man, as usual. Lamella was unlucky with his finish where he made an amazing run. Kane started the move and then Lamella bounced it off the post and Kane tapped it in. But then his second goal was just typical Harry Kane. It was a mistake at the back. And then he got the defender 1v1, shifted it half a yard and whipped it in with a nutmegged finish. But in the end, Jose was making big calls, taking players off. But his squad depth was incredible. I felt a little bit sorry for Zagreb because they started the game really well. They're a sharp side. They play some good football. Didn't really create too many chances. Lloris wasn't too busy, but the midfielders for Zagreb were excellent. Endon Bello put in some performance as well, by the way. But as I said, it was the Kane show and Tottenham got the job done. It was a very professional performance.
Would you bet against Jose Mourinho in a competition like this, Stevie?
Oh, no, absolutely not. This is what he's all about. He just gets it done. They went fantastic today. They kind of were in first gear as well. Zagreb, yes. Mm-hmm. I've got some nice players. They play some nice football, but there's no cutting edge. And this was a bit of a practice match, pretty much, for Spurs. But as you asked me, you can't bet against Jose Mourinho in his competition or any competition.
That's true. Gab, Stevie says he's got the Premier League sides as the favourites here. What about you in the Europa League?
You know, the way I look at it, and I think there's certain teams that have consciously said we're going to put the Europa League as a priority. I think that'll be the case with Arsenal when they realize it's going to be very tough for them to finish top four. So that is an edge to Arsenal. I think United, if they get past Milan, of course, can make it a priority because they're not going to win the league and you know their top four spot domestically is pretty much locked up. I don't think that's the case for Spurs. I don't think that's the case for Roma. Some of these other contenders could be the case for Milan if they advance. So I'd widen it out a little bit. I'd include Arsenal, Spurs, and whoever wins the Milan-Manchester United clash as among the likeliest favourites.
Well, let's take a look at the rest of the results across the Europa League today. Obviously, the games that we discussed with you. Villarreal with a win over Dinamo Kiev. Rangers and Slavia Prague playing out a 1-1 draw. Roma with a 3-0 win over Shakhtar Donetsk. Same scoreline for Ajax against Young Boys in Granada, continuing to fly high with Diego Martinez at the helm. 2-0 it finished over Mulder.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
The fallout from Juve's Champions League exit continues in Italy. Gazzetta saying TR7 from King to confusion. Corriere, Ronaldo is a burden now. And Tutto Sport looking to the future and saying Juve reformation. But all the talk is still about that wall on the free kick, the Sergio Oliveira free kick. It went under the wall by both Cristiano Ronaldo, Alvaro Morata and Adrian Rabiot. You see those two jumping up, turning their backs to the ball. And there have been some quotes that we'd like to bring to you about this moment. Mbemba, the Porto centre-back, said, "We'd seen on video how the Juve wall reacts to free kicks. Oliveira's decision was based on the possibility of them jumping." Fabio Capello called the moment unforgivable. He said, certain goals can't be conceded, but this is the worst. Cristiano Ronaldo jumping and turning in the wall. Whoever's in the wall can't be afraid of being hit. That was an unforgivable error with no excuses. In my day, you chose the players who went into the wall and they couldn't be someone afraid of the ball. Cruyff used to say that you should never put beautiful players jumping on the wall against free kicks because they're afraid to ruin their face. I wonder if any of my ex-player pundits were put in the wall by their coaches.
Oh, take your pick.
Frank, what did you make of this moment?
Well, I was just on the side of the wall because I wasn't but just one reason, to sacrifice myself. It was just to sacrifice myself, you know. If it was indirect, you know, I was had to get out and take the ball in the face because I was very ugly, so whatever. But I agree with that, you know. You have to go for it. I mean, a wall is a wall. A wall shouldn't move. I mean, they created a new fashion of holding the wall with the wall jumping and somebody laying down, and that can be okay, accepted. But when you jump and you have nobody, and on top of it you do it so many times that even the opponent, they know that you're going to do that and they use it, it's a real big, huge mistake, especially from Italy. I mean, in Italy, at Juve, there is a real way of defending, and I talked about that before. You know how to defend, and free kicks, they were experts on not being at, you know, in the right distance, just moving up, you know, jumping if needed, but not everybody. It's a science in Italy, the way to defend. And Gabs can hold me back on that. But really, that was huge. That was a huge mistake.
Actually, I'll give Gab the right to respond then on that one. Is it a science then, Gab? How have a Juve side like this left this moment, for this to happen? We know how important Champions League games are. Pirlo himself said that they didn't sense the danger, but how did they let that happen?
Well, Pirlo said, I've actually never seen them turn their backs like that before, post-game, which I'm sure people have found video and shown that actually, in fact, it has happened before. I think the thinking was, and there was some suggestion that somebody, that Weston McKennie was would have ordinarily gone and laid down behind them. They felt it wasn't necessary because he was so far away. I suspect that's part of the reason that they jumped as well. You know, it doesn't really matter that they turned their backs because in the end, he hit it low to the ground like that. I think it was just a collective failure. It was an underestimation of what Sergio Oliveira would do from there, that he would shoot on goal. And I think it's as simple as that. They said there is no way that this guy is going to hit it low from there. And so they said, oh, then all we ought to do is jump and turn our heads and we're good.
Stevie, you were pretty stunned by this moment. You can see why many managers are putting players laying down behind the wall right now, can't you?
To be honest, I don't think that's the biggest factor in this. I think when you look at a picture of that, that's a wall that hasn't been coached. And I think Capello's getting at that. You know, particularly when you're a young manager, you assume things way more than you do when you're a couple of years into the job. Because at the end of the day, you have to assume that nobody understands what you want. And you have to make sure, regardless of whether it's Ronaldo or anybody else or a kid, you walk them through it.
So this is Pirlo's fault?
Absolutely, this is Pirlo's fault. He should be sticking his finger in their face and saying, right, this is our, going to be our wall, or whatever wall I put in, and you can either jump or you stand, but you stay straight and you stay together. And every single coach in the world will tell its wall, stay together. Now, do you think this wall has been told to stay together? I think Pirlo has shown a bit of an experience here. He's clearly assumed that the people in the wall know what they're doing, and he hasn't walked them through properly. That's what this looks like to me.
Shecky, you're not going to want to see that wall in front of you as a goalkeeper, are you?
Oh, absolutely not. That was as bad a wall as I've ever seen at this level of football. And I agree fully with Stevie. This is down to the coach. This is down to Andrea Pirlo in talking to those players. And it doesn't even have to be those players specifically. Just talking to his team about building a wall and how you're supposed to react or not, as the case may be, and making sure that everybody gets that message. And regardless of who's in that wall, They know what's expected of them. On the other hand, I kind of remember Andrea Pirlo defending in his latter years, and to see that wall, it's kind of reflective of Pirlo and his own defensive efforts in his own career.
What do you reckon, Don?
I don't know, Kay. I mean, am I missing something here? These guys are professional footballers. I don't see how it's Pirlo's fault. When you get put in a wall,
Stevie, let me finish, mate.
You professional footballer, if you're told to stand in a wall because you're going to block a free kick, there was a centre-half in there, Cuadrado was in there, Morata was in there, Ronaldo was in there. The wall is horrendous. It's one of the worst walls I've ever seen in my life, but I don't think that needs coaching, Stevie. I think you just stand there. You don't have to jump. You just stand there. This is the Champions League. This is Juventus. This is playing for some of the biggest clubs in world football, trying to get into the latter stages of the Champions League. Stand there and take that little leather ball right in the face if you're serious about winning the Champions League. It's just a wall. Stand in there.
And you've just made my point. He's assuming that because you're a professional footballer, know what to do.
Well, yes.
Hold on a second.
The face, man.
Right, let me dissect this for you. You've got four professional footballers in a wall playing for Juventus in a big Champions League game, but yet they don't know what to do. Does that not prove the point? Because
well,
if they knew what to do, Ronaldo wouldn't have turned his back. The other two on the side wouldn't have split. And Morata wouldn't be halfway up and halfway done. Never assume. You've got to make sure they know what they're doing and they have to do it. They clearly didn't know what they were doing.
This might tell you a story about actually what's happening in Juventus. This might just be we're looking at a wall and saying, oh, it's the wall, it's the lack of bravery. You know, it's got to be more than that. You know, Juventus have lost some games at the start of the season where if Mauricio Sarri was in charge, he would have got absolutely battered. You know, I heard Kay there say one of the headlines, Ronaldo's a burden. I mean, that's a bit strong. I'd be looking at people like Rabiot and people like Aaron Ramsey before I even look at someone like Ronaldo. I mean, why is it someone who's a superstar, like when Juventus doesn't win the Champions League, it's Ronaldo's fault. When Liverpool lose six games on the spin, it's Thiago's fault. And when Barca are in decline, it's Messi's fault. How about the rest of them, by the way, standing up and starting to play?
No, what are you talking about? Ronaldo's got his backside facing the guy the free kick. Yeah,
exactly.
And you want to let Ronaldo off?
No. I'm just saying in general. I'm not saying in the wall. I'm saying in general. Because Kay read the headline there, Stevie, where Ronaldo's a burden. Now, in the wall, obviously, I'm just talking about the bigger picture. I find it incredible that people are looking at Ronaldo, calling him a burden. What's the rest of the players doing?
Why people are pointing the finger at Ronaldo is because he was brought in for a specific cause, and that cause has fell flat for the last 3 years. So given the money you spend on Ronaldo, you understand people questioning that as a project and what it means and the burden it is on Juventus financially for a project that has failed. But to the point in this wall, and listen, I was talking about Pirlo's defensive duties as a player, totally turning cheek, but he has to set his stall out. He has to set the whole atmosphere and attitude around how they defend, not just wars, but just in general. And I think I'm with Stevie here. I think that comes from the coach. And to have a war where three out of the four turn their backs in the way that they do, that's more than just one player shirking his duty. That points to a bigger issue that I think the manager has to take responsibility for.
But Gab, Don did bring up a good point, because it is almost the implication from some, and I wonder if this is the case in Italy with those headlines we've seen, that this does fall on Ronaldo's shoulders. More than the coach, we're seeing him get the blame.
I think actually I'm with Shaka here. I think the context of that headline was more about, you know, financial issues and how much Cristiano is costing them a year in wages and amortization. He has another year left after this. This whole notion, which kind of really bugs me, about, oh, Cristiano was brought in to win the Champions League. That was the project the first 2 years, right? They spent enormous amounts of money. People thought maybe it was the final piece in the puzzle. They spent a ton of money on players around him, on veteran players, on high-priced free agents. And then the numbers didn't add up. After 2 years, and this is why they went in a different direction under Pirlo this summer, they said, all right, we're going to start over. We can't sell Ronaldo. We can't move him on. He's going to be part of the project, but we're going to have a year of transition because we need to. Because there's no team in Europe that's successful that doesn't go out there and play attacking football, dominating the pitch. And that is simply something that Juventus were not doing. Even when they were winning leagues at home, they weren't doing that. They were much more conservative in the way they played. And they didn't want to play that way anymore. And that's why they went down the Pirlo route. And Ronaldo, by the way, is having his best season at Juve this year under Pirlo. Obviously, he had an absolute stinker at Porto. But, you know, we can go on and on about the wall. And, yeah, it's pretty embarrassing. But, guys, Juventus played awful both halves in the first leg. And they were awful in the first half against Porto in the second leg. And that's why they went out, more so than the fact that the wall opened up.
Yeah, but that's my point, Gab. That is my point about Ronaldo. It's, you know, you mentioned the finances, which has got nothing to do with him, by the way. They brought him in to be a superstar and to pay him absolute fortunes. But we all know the game on this panel. You can't do it on your own. You can't have a 36-year-old Ronaldo on his own taking Juve to Champions League finals and domestic finals and winning every single game and scoring 40 goals a season. When you're 36 like Ronaldo and what Messi is and what Zlatan's doing, it, you need a team around you. And you're right, Gabby. He has had a really good season. To
and
lay
that's
this
what they've tried to do this season, Don.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But to lay but, it all but, on but Ronaldo, that I think is it why... seems harsh to me.
No, but you're missing the point. Let me make an analogy, Don. When you were younger and more handsome, maybe you could pull off the fancy sports car and ride around town. At some point, you can't afford the fancy sports car anymore. And, yeah, you still have it. It's not the sports car's fault. But you're operating in a different world. And that's a situation Juve find themselves in.
And, Gab, your latest piece for ESPN.com, you still say, though, that the Champions League nightmare doesn't change the fact that the club is actually on the right track. So can you explain that to us?
Well, it's because for years of playing a brand of football, which nobody in Europe played except for Atletico or had any success with, they said, we need to go and dominate the opposition. We have to dominate the pitch. This, by the way, isn't a new thing. Max Allegri said it in his last year. That's why he tried the five-star attack and all this nonsense. But he couldn't get it done. He couldn't make it work, which is why he opted to leave. They thought Sarri could do it. Sarri, after a few months, he didn't have the courage to do it. And so he went back and he played conservative football. So they went in and they tried to do it with Pirlo this year. They've made much, much more sweeping changes in their recruitment, in their scouting, in the way they're set up, because they want to do this. Now, Pirlo may be too experienced. It might not work. He might not be the right man. But they're committed to this direction. And, you know, I've said this a million times, but I did come up with an analogy which maybe works. They're committed to owning an electric car, okay? Pirlo will find out if he's a Tesla or if he's a golf cart. If he's a golf cart, they'll get rid of him, but they're going to replace him with another electric car. They're not going back to what it was before, where it was everybody back and just wait for something to happen at the other end, and then it's all defend, because they don't think that football works anymore, and I think they're right.
But it's not just the coach, is it, Gab? They need some more changes if there is to be this rebuild. What else? What other pieces do they need to bring in?
Well, the obvious piece is in midfield, because if you're going to demand a lot of the ball and try to play fast, you need somebody who can actually pass the ball well in the middle of the park. And that's not Arthur. It's not Bentancur. They had a guy like Pjanic, although he'd gone off the boil. They have to bring somebody in that position. They've looked at youngsters. They've got Rovella coming in from Genoa. They've got Fagioli in-house, who we'll probably see more of. They may need to buy somebody. But look, top to bottom, this team, they're not in such terrible shape. You still have Chesney for a while. Demiral and De Ligt is a young, very good defensive partnership, longer term. You've got two very promising wingers in Kulusevski and Chiesa, already showed his worth. You still have Dybala knocking about. Maybe he'll come good, maybe he won't. So, you know, they are trying to, and you've got Weston McKennie, who, you know, I think is a real value added to this team. So, you know, they are building towards something, but it's going to take time. And COVID hasn't helped, and the losses, and the overspending before. None of this stuff has helped, and they can't just dump these players. Like, oh, let's sell Ramsey. Who's going to buy Ramsey and his wages? You know, it's going to be like the Arsenal situation with Ozil and Papastathopoulos, where you couldn't get rid of these guys because you signed them to contracts that were too big. So people have to be patient because it will take time.
Don, do you share Gab's optimism for Juve's future?
I don't, Kay, because the Juve that I've watched this season, I watched them against Atalanta. I've watched them many times this season, but the Atalanta game, they were very slow. I mean, the last midfield player that could actually get around the pitch for them was Blaise Matuidi, and that was a few years ago. I look at them the other week against Atalanta, and they had Bentancur in there with Rabiot. Two of them couldn't move. Me and Stevie and Frank probably are quicker than them two now. So what they need to add to this team is a bit of dynamism, a bit of pace. They need to get around the pitch. That's what the modern game is. The modern game, it's almost like K. Perlo's team almost reflects what he was like as a player. In my opinion, when I watch Juve play, they're a little bit slow, they're a little bit silky, they can all handle a ball, they can all look good. When you come up against teams like Bayern in the Champions League, and you come up against teams like Liverpool when they're flying, and teams in Serie A when they put you under pressure, Juve can't live with it, because you can't just out-possess teams anymore. The game's different, it's moved on. And I think they need investment, but they need more dynamism in the team. I just think they're too slow.
I think Gab might be a bit offended by your pronunciation of Thilo, Don.
I'm sorry, Kate.
No, I'm just saying, Don, that's what I'm highlighting. They need more, but they're ponderous. I completely agree with you. But I'm optimistic that they've realized this and they're moving in small steps towards it. But this season, they just don't have midfielders, apart from McKennie, who are dynamic. And just one guy is not enough. So they are trying to address it. But it's going to take time because they're in a big hole because they spent way too much money before him. Blaise Matuidi, by the way, that's another guy. Great player, world champion, blah, blah, blah. They had to pay him to leave, right? This is how bad the situation got.
Frank?
Yeah, I think when I hear the guys and making the statements about Juventus, we can say that many European top clubs in Europe are facing the same problems, you know, being slow, wondering, you know, if they should get rid of some players where they don't have the level they are expecting, and looking for, in fact, you know, how they went down so dramatically. Liverpool, Real Madrid, Barcelona, even Paris Saint-Germain. Paris Saint-Germain did a fantastic game against Barcelona, but for the rest of the season, I tell you, we can wonder, you know, what they are doing. They're not as good as they were the last summer. So, of course, Juventus, but it works for so many clubs that I think making a statement and rushing to, you know, a big change for every big club is maybe too soon, because the pandemic is there. It hurt everybody. And in our world of football, I think it hurt mainly the top teams. So people should be more patient before making a statement. And people in the club should think twice before getting rid of some people, some players who maybe didn't have, you know, physically the time to get the process of being fit and good enough for what we expect from them.
A golf cart or a Tesla. You can hear more analogies from Gab on the Gab and Jules podcast. The two delve into the biggest topics from the football world twice a week. Check it out on the ESPN Pod Center and download it there.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Be sure to check out even more football content on our ESPN FC YouTube page. It is updated daily and you can find discussion, debate, highlights and much more over there. Now, remember last week I had my first taste of Shaka's power rankings.
I bet it tastes awful still.
No, I just left a bit of taste in the mouth, I have to say. But I'm back for more, Shaka. I am back for more. I was that impressed last week. So what have you come up with us for us this week?
Let me just say straight ahead, Kay, you're most welcome. In at number 10, Besiktas. PSG, after they drew at Barcelona, but at least they're through, so they get some love. Sporting, down in 8. Slavia Praha, down in 7. Ajax can just continue to run rampant wherever they show up, in at 6. Tommy Tuchel's Chelsea at 5. Manchester City knocked off their mighty perch after losing to Manchester United. Enter in at 3. Glasgow Rangers, but for that draw against Slavia Prague, and they went and they got knocked out of the cup a couple of weeks ago, as I keep mentioning. That's purged them. So they're in at 2. So they're denied number 1 spot because Bayern Munich, despite their stumbles, have found their feet. Smash par 4 past Dortmund. They're number 1. There are no arguments. Good night, everybody.
I have an argument. PSG are a new side in there with a tie that they were expected to win with the way they played against Barcelona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everybody else lost. Jack. Those who were there last week lost.
Jack, I think
I'm trying
you
to remember who was there.
No. I want to talk about that. Shaka, you put PSG. Okay, yeah. Thank you very much. It's a French team. I don't know. You want to please me, I know. But when you have... What about Porto, who won against Juventus and play fantastically 10 against 11? I know. I'm sorry. PSG was very bad, let's say horrible in the second leg, where Porto was absolutely fantastic. And you want to hurt the all Portuguese community. Because I don't see any Portuguese team. I don't see Porto in the 10.
You know what, Shaka? I've known you for a long time.
Sporting are in there, no?
Shaka, I've known you
Sporting
for a long time.
Yeah, Portugal, they are. Where are they from?
Hey, Shaka.
Okay. Where's that, Stevie?
I've known you for a long time, right? And I thought I knew pretty much everything about you. I didn't realise you were a Celtic supporter.
Yeah.
How can you have Rangers at number 2? The first team in Europe to win a domestic title. And by the way, when was the last time Bayern lost? I know you don't know. February. When was the last time Glasgow Rangers lost? Last year, last December. But you've still got Bayern at number 1. You must be a Celtic supporter. No question.
How did Rangers do in the Europa League today?
Well, they drew.
Well, they're still
against Sparta Prague.
That's all I wanted to second. I just wanted to make sure.
Undefeated.
I just wanted to make sure.
Away from home.
I'm just saying, they drew today, and as much as I wanted to, I just couldn't. After Bayern beat Dortmund on the weekend as well.
Gab, do you think there should be more Italian teams in there?
No, never mind the Italian teams. I don't.
You're right, Gab.
But I don't get it, right? You've got... You have the team that's top of the league in the Bundesliga. You have the team that's top of the league in the Premier League. You've got the team that's top of the league in Scotland. You've got the team that's top of the league in Serie A. Weirdly, you do not have any love for the team that's top of the league in France, which I think is a bit odd. But you also don't have the team that's top of the league in La Liga. In fact, you don't have any teams whatsoever from Spain.
Well, no, the team that's top of La Liga just got beat off Chelsea. Hold on, Gab. Hold on. The team that's top in La Liga just got beat off Chelsea. The team that's top in France just got smashed twice from Ajax.
Gab, where's Granada? They're in the Europa League. What? They're in the top 10 in La Liga. They've got a 40-year-old coach who's been doing the business with it. Are you anti-La Liga?
Don't you start, Kay.
Don't you start.
I'm still bitter about the bet over Lewandowski and Haaland.
It doesn't make sense, Shaq.
You were telling me how... You were just saying how much you loved the Power Rankers last week. Now, all of a sudden, you let that mob turn you.
I've changed my mind, Shaq.
I take back all those nice things I keep saying about you, Kay.
It just doesn't make sense. Thomas Tuchel is unbeaten.
He's unbeaten in 11 games,
nine clean sheets. Yet they're behind Man City, who lost last week. Go on.
Hold on, Don. Quantify that. It doesn't make sense to you.
No. Your top five.
You've got to quantify that. Just say it.
Get the top five up again for me. It doesn't make sense. Man City have lost one game in 21. They're a million points clear in the Premier League, yet they're fourth. Inter Milan have won seven on the spin, right? They're doing quite well. But seven on the spin is nowhere near one defeat in 21. Glasgow Rangers have already won their league, 55 titles, more than any team in the whole world. Bayern drew 3-3 against Bielefeld. Bayern lost against Eintracht Frankfurt, but they're still top.
So who should be top, Don?
Rangers.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Easy.
Don, you cannot. Don and Stevie, Rangers. We are talking about the Scottish League.
When you made this top guys,
we all due respect. We're talking about the Scottish League.
Just start
Frank, name me another side. Name me another side, Frank, in the whole of Europe that's unbeaten in their domestic league and in Europe.
There's a side in the fifth division in Finland that are romping away with it.
Yeah. Well, they're not, are they? Because they're not in Europe.
Finland is in games and a bit of a giggle too. Extra time always available on YouTube where the panel will answer your questions. And yeah, probably give Shaka a bit of stick too. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Have you seen our brand new show, Football Americas, on ESPN Plus yet? If not, be sure to check it out with Sebi Salazar and Hercules Gomez. A new one dropped today. Here's more from the dynamic duo.
Okay, thank you very much. Herc, we got into a lot on today's edition of Football Americas, but we led the show talking about Sergiño Dest and really what I think we have to catalog as a bounce-back performance in the second leg for Barcelona against PSG. No, there was no remontada, but he did start. He played 66 minutes. He nearly scored, Herc, off the crossbar, if not for a great save from Keylor Navas. So as we look at this player, at least we can say from an evolution standpoint, he certainly took a step, didn't he, from the first leg into the second.
Yeah, but what is that really saying after that first leg? I mean, listen, I know this is a bit hard on him because stylistically, at least on paper, his direct matchup is Kylian Mbappe. That's going to be a handful for any defender on earth, yet alone a defender who, when he was sold to Barcelona, had under 35 first-team games under his belt. So, yeah, he did a lot better because they weren't really forced to defend. This was a PSG who just sat back and was willing to counter, was underwhelming, if you will. He was a lot better in possession, which I think is going to be his game going forward. He was brought here to be that possession type of outside back, not a defensive back, if you will. So, yeah, better from him, but that first leg was rough. That was killing Mbappe. That was directly into what is Sergiño Dest destroying that Barcelona back line. Piqué played for the first time in that back line after 3 months. Lenglet didn't do himself any favors. Sergiño Dest had Dembélé in front of him, who's a defensive liability. It was a rough go, but this was much better.
Yeah, and I think really the attacking play from Sergiño Dest was a lot better. Look, if we're going to judge Sergiño Dest on how he does defensively against Kylian Mbappe, he's going to come up short every time, and so are most right backs in the world. But he was given Kurzawa, who, you know, maybe is not a solid French international, but is a real French international, the business, especially in that first half. So if you're beating that player, a player of, for me, kind of that elite status, elite resume, I think we can say that Dest certainly took a step forward. I was looking on our website. Sam Marsden actually gave him a 7 out of 10 for the game. Exaggerated or just about right?
Just about right. Yeah, that'd be fair. 6.5 to a 7 around there. Listen, Barcelona has struggled this year. Sergiño Dest has not been the exception. He's played about 60-some-odd minute or percentage of the minutes available to him. But there's one interesting stat. He started all but one Champions League game. That tells me Ronald Koeman trusts this player. He can only get better at 20 years of age. But at a club like Barcelona, there is no waiting around.
And that's really the fact, isn't it? Ronald Koeman seems to trust this player, even when he goes out into public and after a match criticizes him, like he did after the first leg against PSG for turning off against Mbappe. He still gives him a run in the second leg. And that, if nothing else, is going to be critical to Dest's development. All right, we'll leave it there for now, Herc. That's it for Football America as we send it back to you, Kay.
Stick around with us now, though. Extra time is coming up after this. Thanks for being with us for the latest edition. Welcome into Extra Time. Your questions have been coming in. We'll get started. From Purple Griffin asking, Shaka, as a keeper, what goes through your mind after you make a bad pass that leads to a goal by the opposition? We've seen Leno make 2 consecutive mistakes. Do you think his is to blame?
That wasn't Leno's today. That wasn't Burden Leno's.
Oh, what was it? Lo Celso,
right? Let me tell you, Lo Celso's touch was as bad as mine. No, with my bad back, that was awful. I'm not answering that because I don't think Leno was to blame.
You should have stopped it, Shaka. As a keeper, what goes through your mind?
Oh my God!
Because that would be a tough one straight away.
That's actually a good question, Shaka. As a keeper, what does go through your mind?
Yeah. If everything at all, that is. Everything at all. Oh. No, fair enough.
Harsh.
All right, next. Jerome Ashton.
I don't think he was to blame.
All right.
I don't think he was to blame.
Jerome Ashkenazi says Madrid loanees have proved to be impactful on their new teams. Bale, James, Odegaard, Ceballos. Is this more indicative of Zidane's poor managing of talent or something else? Would they be challenging in La Liga if they kept any of them? What do you reckon about this, Frank? Zidane may be getting a bit criticised here. And by the way, Real Madrid are still challenging in La Liga.
I don't know. I don't know what I can think about that, you know. I mean, many clubs have too many players that they have to get rid of because those players want to play overall. I really don't know if if it's anybody's mistakes, or especially Zidane's mistakes, if those players, they play in some other clubs, and if they should play for Real Madrid. I don't have any answer for that. I mean, it's everybody think what they want to think about Zidane managing, but I have to say, so far, it's not that bad.
What do you think, Stevie? Is it poor management or something else?
No, so Bale's only started, Bale's been there 6 months, and he's only started basically 2 weeks ago, starting to play properly. So it's not, so far, it's two games. Odegaard, listen, he scored a goal today, but the goalkeeper threw it in. Odegaard hasn't done an awful lot since he went to Arsenal. Ceballos is coming off the bench, as he was Real Madrid. And James, I would say, is probably the only one that's really proved his worth so far. He's had some injuries, but when he's played, he's made a huge difference. But I would suggest the other three have still got a bit to go to have anybody saying that Zidane's not capable of sorting them out.
Dan the Orange Man wants to know, Stevie, did you feel like teams were more motivated to defeat you in your title defence seasons? And how difficult was it to win back-to-back titles?
Well, the first part of that is no, because everybody always wanted to beat us anyway. But the second part is definitely yes. There's just... It's very hard to everybody wants you just to put your finger and say that's what it is. It's not just that. There are all kinds of different factors. Because everyone wants to beat you. Is it possible they want to beat you more? Is your motivation only at 99.9% instead of 100? I mean, it's difficult to put your finger on one actual thing, to be honest.
Don, the next one's for you from Rico. It says, hey, Don, after watching Manchester United draw against Milan today, what percentage do you give your West Ham to walk away with the 3 points on Sunday?
Oh, that is a good one. I'd give them quite a chance, Kay, because they're absolutely flying. I interviewed Thomas Soucek today, and he tells me the dressing room is absolutely buzzing for the game. United have got injuries left, right and centre to their major players. No Cavani, no Rashford, no Martial. So it's a patched up side, even though they'll still have a good side. But West Ham will go there with, I think, a little bit of confidence. I'd probably have that as a 50-50.
What?
A 50-50.
50-50?
A 50-50.
Yeah, that's it. Oh.
Shaka, you should come in on this one. What do you reckon? West Ham, you know, to walk away with the 3 points.
I'm going to go 60-40 to the Hammers.
Yeah, right.
The Hammers are favourites going into this game. I don't think so.
Ahmed Magid said, Stevie, would Haaland work well in Klopp's system? And could he do what Firmino does at Liverpool?
Listen, Haaland can go and play in any system. Absolutely no danger. Who cares what system? He can play it. Get him in your team.
Put him anywhere. Okay. Teddy, what was the best piece of advice any manager gave you in the middle of a match? This is what Teddy asks. So, Frank, what was the best piece of advice any manager ever gave you in the middle of a match?
Wow. Is that for me?
I have to remember.
I was going to give it to Frank.
No. Kick him as hard as you can the next
time. Retire.
Yeah. Go, Frank. It's time to get your shower. Yeah.
Frank, go stand in the wall for 3 kicks. Yes.
You stink. Go get a shower. You stink, Frankie. Yeah, thank you very much. I think.
Next time, bring your boots, Frank. That's what he said.
Yeah. That's what it is. I think maybe Aimé Jacquet during the final. Well, he said it a little bit before. During the meeting that we had, but just before the first corner that we had, he went and shouted to us, you know, guys, spot on corner kicks, spot on, and we scored 2 goals against Brazil in final.
Oh, not bad. It's not bad at all. Don, can you match that?
Nice. Mine was quite funny. Stevie played in the game. I was sitting on the bench when Coventry played Liverpool at Highfield Road, and we got absolutely murdered. I think we were losing 3 or 4 nil. And Graham Souness, the manager, said to me, said, "Uch," he went, get warmed up. He went, "You're going on. I want you to top someone right in front of the dugouts and start a 22-man brawl because I want to chin Gordon Strachan."
Do you remember this, Stevie?
I actually, Don's right, I was there. I didn't play in the game, though. Because if you remember,
you
Don...
in the brawl, though?
If he remembers, Jamie Redknapp either had just been sent off or... Or got sent off. And I was the one that had to take him into the dressing rooms. So I was there. Not on the field, though.
So no brawl there. Kevin Erlandson says, "At what age did you reach full maturity as a player and what made you realise it?" Shaka.
50?
52, K. 52. I've just hit a peak right now.
I'm still looking for it, you know.
Yeah. About 10 years' time.
God, come on. Give me an answer here. What age?
Do you know my age, Kay? I think I would have been about 27, 28 when I got given the armband at Everton. That's when I sort of knuckled down and thought, right, this is proper stuff, this now. I've got the armband. I'm captaining Everton. I'm back on Merseyside. I better start doing this properly. And I was under a good manager in Walter Smith, who was hard but very fair. So I reckon about 27, 28.
27, 28, would you say the same for you, Stevie?
No, I'd say 85. 1985.
Right, 85
years of age.
85.
You said 85. No, 1985. You don't know.
They asked what age and you said I'd say 85.
So I would be 24.
Right, so even younger.
24.
Okay, I'll stick with you, Stevie. Frank McManaman says, "What were the primary shirt numbers that you wore in your playing days and did they have any sort of significance to you?"
Oh, number four.
Number four.
Yeah, number four at Liverpool. To wear that after some of the players that had worn it. You know, people like Phil Thompson, Tommy Smith. I mean, following people like that, I mean, number four.
Big significance.
Oh, big time.
What about you, Don?
Number four as well. Okay, little tattoo there. Number four on my arm. Don't know if you can quite see it, but I was quite lucky enough to wear the 10 shirt a lot, and 10 across Europe was always the sort of magical number. So I got given that while I was at Everton and Scotland. So 4 or 10.
Frank, shirt numbers, significance?
Everything but the number four, because for us in France, the number four is the guy who only knows how to destroy football and not build football. Sorry, guys.
Oh, dear.
But it was more the number five as a sweeper, and after the 18 because of the birth date of my son when I played for France.
Very nice. Shaka, as a goalkeeper, are you fussy about what number a goalkeeper should have on his back?
You never asked Shaka what number he wore.
Yeah, exactly. Not particularly. I wore number 15 when I was at Newcastle. I wore 12 at West Ham for one season, just because when I joined, those were the lowest numbers that were still available. So other than that, I wore number one and didn't matter.
I wasn't being serious, by the way. I just thought goalie wore number one.
No,
I thought you all wore number one.
No, but some of them, obviously you get the 13 with the second one, then some of them do want a different number on the back, and I wondered if...
When you join a squad, you get a squad number.
Yeah.
Well, he's number one in our hearts anyway, aren't you, Shaka? Zeke, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Frank, what were the guys' go-to celebrations after scoring or making a save? I would like to see some examples.
Well, I'm not into that kind of, strange things, you know, which is celebration. I mean, in how they prepare something, it's like, wow, you know, we're going to do that. We're going to, I don't know even the thing what they do and stuff like that. That's crazy. I mean, we were just happy when we score goals, so I'm not going into that, you know. That's not my time and I will never be. You know, I find it stupid.
You're talking, but you just laugh. I just scored.
How about you, Stevie?
Me? Yeah. Oh, I did it easy.
Get in.
Yeah. I think it was something else. I probably said something else, but along similar sort of line.
I like that.
It's the old John Walk one, isn't it, Stevie? It's the old John Walk one. Yeah.
What about you, Don?
No, I was straight in the crowd, Mike. Yellow card, straight in the crowd, too immature. I wasn't mature till I was 27, 28, so anything before that, I was just in the crowd.
Oh, you could peak at 84 or 85.
Exactly.
The best is yet to come. Shaka, did you have one when you made a great save?
Oh, you got to make a great save.
No,
false,
I never celebrated when I made a save. Nor did I celebrate for my wonderful assist for West Ham away to Spurs that one time at White Hart Lane. I just went back to the goal because I, with that wonderful assist.
Yeah, just smile.
Bravo, bravo.
What was your favourite celebration that you saw, Stevie? Does one come to mind?
I was thinking about Shaka. What did he do when the ball hit the back of the net? What did he say? What did he do? As soon as it hit the net, I'd be like,
Every time a goal scored on me, I somehow found myself sitting on the floor, knees up, both arms around my knees. I have a classic pose for when I got scored on. That much I have.
Oh, poor Shaka. Anyway, thanks so much, guys, and thanks to everybody for all your questions. Don't forget, you can catch ESPN FC 7 days a week on ESPN Plus.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.